Did you miss all that mess on Southbound 5, James? That's before you. Yeah.
Okay. I did. You might want to tell everyone else about that mess.
Yeah. Semi-truck Southbound 5, James Street, right here downtown. All lanes blocked. Long-term investigation. It's going to be a mess for hours.
Yep.
Welcome to Tuesday. Slick roads, everybody, too. Transition Tuesday, John. Sunshine and dry later on. But right now, it's October.
Yes. We promised you, you know, I told you that we are notorious for having, or I should say, we're not famous enough for having really warm weather into the third week of June. Well, just not today. Tomorrow it's going to be nice. It's going to be nice this weekend, just not today. Welcome to the John Carlson Show radio program and record. Big Mike there for the second day in a row.
Hey, good morning.
All right.
I like to call this time of year fake fall.
How do you like the morning shift?
It's very dark.
Thanks for that profound observation.
8 o'clock p.m. sunsets are over.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're at that point.
Well, but yeah, even if it's warm, the days seem
well,
shorter.
You know, and not to be contrarian here, but good, because I kind of like it being nighttime at nighttime, especially when you got a 3:30 a.m. call time. No, John, I like the morning show just fine. It gets me the opportunity to stretch creatively and do things a little differently than I do in the afternoon with Ari Hoffman. To the surprise of nobody in KVI country, John Carlson, Ari Hoffman, two very different hosts with two very different styles, and I love having the opportunity to work with both of you.
And we're all feeling good, right? I was worried, like, did young Zach work all day yesterday?
Yeah.
Pauljula's homesick. Something about a super spreader, I'm hearing.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
Not
so
here.
Just watch. Right. Just kind of keep an eye on things, you guys.
Is that one more reason to avoid young Zach?
I just heard something about a super
spreader.
He's
a great young man. We are so lucky to have him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, we keep hearing the stories that, and you know, Seattle tourism and business boosters are understandably behind this narrative that Seattle has turned the corner. Things are getting better. Seattle's on the upswing. And then you get stories like this.
Goodwill plans to close two stores in Seattle. Evergreen Goodwill of Northwest Washington says that the locations in South Lake Union and the University District will close. It cited theft, safety concerns, and rising rents. Stores will remain open and accept donations through September 22nd. All employees will be offered positions at other Goodwill stores.
Okay, this is so sad because Goodwill is where a lot of low-income people go to do their shopping. And you can get, you know, doesn't get a lot of attention, but a lot of stores will move unsold merchandise, you know, socks, t-shirts, they'll move them over to Goodwill. So they're great places to have.
Karen and I have been fans for years. 80% of our home is items from thrift shops, including Goodwill. I kid you not.
Yes, no, some people just, you know, love the whole thrift shop experience. It's like, you know, a permanent garage sale, right? And it's very sad when areas, especially the U District, where a lot of students might go and try and pick up a bargain. I used to go to Goodwill just for every once in a while you get a nugget. You know, you see something really great. And so for a lot of young people and for a lot of lower income people, those are really great stores. And now they've been, we have so regularized and normalized theft, stealing, that a lot of stores that cannot afford upgraded security features, where they can't put things behind plastic that are, you know, high target items for thieves and the like, they're just at the mercy of people. Let's put it this way. The honor system doesn't work so well in Seattle anymore. Yes, I know there's a lot of honorable people, but a lot of less than honorable people also live there and have moved there. And this is what happens. It's very sad. I don't know how the Salvation Army thrifts are doing. I know they've had some of these same challenges, but they've remained open. But it's really, you know, an institution that I've given lots of donations to Goodwill. I assume you guys have too. Lots of donations to Goodwill, and they don't take really bad junk. You know, if they think people are just offloading junk, they say, you know, sorry, we don't take that. They take clothing that can be, you know, cleaned and you know, that still has some good usage, shoes, and also items, household items that people just may not need anymore, or frankly, gifts that people get. Well, I don't want this, and I, you know, there's no receipt. I can't take it back. Why don't we just donate it to Goodwill?
7 years ago, Ballard Goodwill, the score of a lifetime. Ludwig drum set, like new. I still have it. $50, John. I kid
no
you not.
No way.
I asked him. I asked the guy, what's
the
joke here? And he
on.
Said, somebody just brought it back, says they can't use it. Karen goes, well, you knew about this, Mark. And I go, why? And she goes, look at it. It had name tags on it. Mark, I had to buy it. My name was on it. But I still got it. You've probably seen pictures of some of you on
Beatles
social
played.
Media.
That's what Ringo played. Yeah. Ludwig drums.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
But anyway, I'm really sorry to see this happen. A sign of Seattle's recovery would not be Goodwill's closing. It would be Goodwill opening an additional store.
Well, and to say that other part, too, where the employees...
There's 23 of them throughout Western Washington, the Puget Sound area.
Oh, yeah.
There's 23
yeah.
Goodwill stores.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, the employees of these closed stores will be offered positions at other places. It's like, well, how far away are they? And you know, the... employees, much like the clientele, generally lower income folks, that could have massive impact.
Okay, here's Goodwill in a press release being far more candid than many of the corporate press releases from retailers that flee the area. Quote, both Goodwill locations have experienced a troubling rise in property damage, break-ins, and safety concerns for our employees, meaning out of control people probably hepped up on drugs or under the influence or mental health challenges or both who are scaring employees and customers. These challenges, the release goes on, coupled with rising rent and operational costs have made it unsustainable to continue operating in these areas. Again, the one in South Lake Union and the one in the University District. Goodwill is, of course, not the first major store chain to close Seattle locations. Remember, Bartels started closing Seattle locations before and after it was acquired by Rite Aid. Target announced several stores in Seattle were closing last year, again, because of theft and nearby crime. Nike closed its flagship store, its big downtown store in the heart of downtown by Pacific Place. It became famous during WTO when somebody wearing Nike sneakers was spraying graffiti calling Nike a corporate exploiter. Nike moved. They're in Bellevue Square now. They moved their location to Bellevue Square. And, you know, several other stores, Saks off Fifth Avenue downtown, have moved out. There's a bunch of stores. Target announced several stores in Seattle were closing because of crime, I mentioned. Amazon shuttered its retail location. Remember, they tried to experiment with basically an honor system type approach, and that didn't work out either. The city auditor showed that in 2022, Seattle police got 13,000 calls from the top 100 retail locations in Seattle.
Holy smoke.
13,000. Again, this is not in the heart of the pandemic. This is after the pandemic. This is 2022 when Seattle supposedly had started to get its act together. So that's what you need to know about the state of things in the city of Seattle. Yikes. And unfortunately, we see reality like this that suggests things are not getting better, and then reality like this as well.
Three people were sitting in a car. What led up to this is...
This is at Seattle's Jose Rizal Park.
Still unclear, but the driver, a man, was dead here when officers got to the scene. A young woman who was in the car, she had been hurt, and she is at Harborview Medical Center right now in critical condition. Another passenger in the car was not hurt. And speaking to officers here, it sounds like witnesses who may have been in the area say that they heard or saw a black sedan speeding off after all of this happened.
Okay. So the violence, I don't know if this was random violence or targeted violence, something arising out of some sort of beef, but the violence is not going away either. So that is the current state of things in the city of Seattle. There's your Seattle update. If you're a cruise ship passenger, listening to the commute with Carlson this morning. Sorry. Look at all the Starbucks that have closed, including the Starbucks that is literally around the corner from the original Starbucks that is a tourist location that all of us locals know it was not the original Starbucks. That store is a long way gone. All right, we'd love to hear from you. The Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVA. Give me a shout anytime here, 206-421-5757. You can call. In fact, I'm actually going to be asking you to call during the 8 o'clock hour. I'll tell you why in a moment. Or you can just send us a text. Again, send us a text at 206-421-5757. Here's what we're going to do at 8 o'clock. I mentioned Danny Westneat's column late yesterday on the show where he was saying that a survey asking people what they think about various groups had people ranking rural Washingtonians and police officers very high. They got high marks. What do you think of those groups? Like the police. Oh, country folks? Yeah, we like country folks. And then in the middle were, you know, environmentalists and religious folks and Democrats. And then at the toward the bottom of the list were, you know, transgender people, atheists. And on the bottom of the list were Republicans. And I noted the irony that the top two groups were conservative folks. Most cops are conservative because they're not naive, they're not silly, they're not woke, and they know that their job is made tougher by people who are. Secondly, rural folks are the most loyal conservative voting bloc for Republicans, just as surely as King County residents tilt toward Democrats. So why are Republicans so unpopular? And Danny Westneat, of course, said, well, it's all because they hate the orange man. They hate Donald Trump. So here's a question I'm going to be asking. I'm going to ask you now so that if you're listening at 8 o'clock, you can participate in this discussion. Have you paid a price for supporting Donald Trump or for telling people you're going to vote for Donald Trump? Have you paid a price? Have you paid a price economically, socially, or personally within your family? You know, have you lost a job or a promotion? Have you lost a job opportunity because you're a Trump supporter? Have you lost friends or maybe groups of friends you used to hang out with where you're no longer welcome? Have you clashed with family members, cousins, brothers, uncles, kids, grandkids, and paid a price because you're a Donald Trump supporter? Now, I'm not, again, this is for 8 o'clock. I'm not asking if you keep a low profile. That's a question we'll ask, you know, at another time. Today, I just want to know if you have spoken up for Trump, if you have said to people, yeah, I'm supporting him, have you paid a price for doing so? We'll ask that question at 8 o'clock.
Are you okay if they don't want to give their name? And
oh, yeah.
Whatever? Okay, I just want to put that out there.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, okay. People don't need to use their names. We never push people on that, and we use the honor system because people who listen to this show are honest people. We like it that way. We love our listeners here on The Commute. They're a lot of people, and they're good people as well. We appreciate that. And there's a lot of other stuff. By the way, speaking of Donald Trump, he just picked up a couple of pretty impressive endorsements that we'll be talking about a little bit later on. Also, a very interesting lawsuit about a protester who was hit and killed by someone who deliberately ran her over during a Black Lives Matter protest, literally ran up the ramp and was trying to hit people. And the media are being very bashful about telling us much about the person who did that, for which the family of this young woman is now seeking a lot of money. Anyway, we'll get into that as well on The Commute with Carlson, plus Operation Pushback, the college professor who dared to speak out against DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion policies at his college, and was harassed and penalized for it, just $1 million in a settlement. Again, we'll talk about all that and so much more as the Morning Commute with Carlson underway at 20 minutes after 6. Big Mike around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. All right. Yeah, 25 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Hey, guess what? right around the corner, like this weekend. What we used to call the Puyallup Fair opens for business for about three full solid weeks of fun and frolicking and activities. And on Labor Day, Monday, September 2nd, all of you veterans, retired military, National Guard, and their dependents are invited to the what we now call the Washington State Fair in Puyallup. Same place, of course, the historic Puyallup Fairgrounds, for Military Appreciation Day. Just show valid military ID. Gate admission is free for you and your family. So from everyone here at KVI, thank you for your service and dedication. Again, that starts Monday, Labor Day, and the Monday after that. And the Monday after that. Three successive Mondays.
No discount? You said free, right?
Free for military members, active and retired, Reserve and National Guard, and their family. So I want everyone out there to have a good time at the fair. Glad we can help play a part there.
Well, and we're delighted to renew our partnership with the fair as well. And for the first time, I think in my time working here, which goes back 8 years, KVI talent will be at the KVI booth for Military Appreciation Mondays. I think the afternoon show is thinking of an excursion. I think we're going on the 16th. I hear a rumor that our own John Carlson might be considering a trip out there as well. So we're really excited to renew our partnership with the fair. This is going to be awesome.
Very nice. Let's go and find out what's happening in the social media world.
Well, the Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep, sponsored by our friends at Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And John, before we started the show here, you had asked me to find stories that give updates on Israel and the conflict in the Middle East. And I found a good news story that was posted by the Jerusalem Post about one of the hostages that has been rescued. The IDF and the Shin Bet on Tuesday rescued Israeli Bedouin hostage Cade Faran Akadi, who was held hostage by Hamas since October 7th from Rafah. The operation was led by Division 162 Brigade 401, nice. Yalom Anti-Tunnel Special Forces, along with the Shinet 13 Naval Commandos.
Where in Gaza?
It is, let me find it here. It doesn't say, but what it does say is that Al-Qaeda is healthy and undergoing further health checks at a unidentified hospital. But I wanted to read this part here from the Jerusalem Post. It is the fourth successful operation to rescue live Israeli hostages from Hamas. There have been several successful operations finding and returning bodies of hostages killed by Hamas. But this is the first live hostage that's been found in a tunnel. All of the live hostage rescues prior to that have been above ground. So I would imagine maybe for security purposes, they're not saying where in Gaza this was. But this is the eighth live hostage rescue from Gaza, which brings the number of remaining hostages down to 108 from an original round of 250.
Right. But a lot of those folks were dead.
Yes. Yeah,
regrettably. I mean, there was a hostage swap, and that was over half a year ago. Mm-hmm. But, a lot of these people are dead. They were actually killed on October 7th, and their bodies were brought over, and they were called hostages.
Correct.
And we know that Yahya Sinwar, who is the evil genius behind Hamas and the October 7th massacre, he's surrounded by hostages, and he is basically the last man standing. Israel has been taking out all of the military command and even some of the political leadership of Hamas, and he is the kingpin. He's still deep underground. Yeah. But he is stuck in Gaza.
Exactly, yeah. And that's your social media moment for this hour. I'll have more in the 7 o'clock hour.
Excellent. You are listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 24 minutes to 7 o'clock in the morning of The John Carlson Show. Matthew Garrett is a professor. Well, he was now a retired professor of history and ethnic studies at Bakersfield College in California. authored several books, peer-reviewed articles as well, and was a very popular professor at Bakersfield. But when he questioned the use of grant money to fund social justice, parentheses, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion projects at his school, he ran into a wall and was essentially harassed and was penalized and demonized. This goes back to 2019 when Professor Garrett questioned how money was being spent. Those concerns were then, again, he said this all publicly. These concerns were parlayed into accusations. He accused his peers of misappropriating money, meaning taking money that is meant for one purpose and spending it on another. The administration decided to investigate him rather than his accusations. Another professor, Erin Miller, had also expressed concerns about this, and she too faced these accusations. It eventually led to a lawsuit. Instead of just dropping the matter, instead of looking the other way, Professor Garrett, who happens to be a white guy, decided to push back. And so he and she filed a federal lawsuit against the college district, saying that their First Amendment rights and their academic freedom was violated. Animosity by some faculty and administrators increased because he was thought to be a rogue member of the faculty. So the bottom line here is that this professor just got a settlement over $2.2 million, as well as an immediate one-term payment of over $150,000. So we're up to $2.4 million as compensation since he was dismissed from the college. And he says, to my colleagues at Bakersfield College and nationwide, I say, keep the faith. We are winning the battle one case at a time. What he's recognized is the rot that has set in around the whole diversity, equity, inclusion movement. And that when you question what's going on, good faith, fact-based, evidence-driven concerns that are raised, you are the response from this crowd is simply to call you names and make you a target of hatred and distrust. So Professor Garrett has left Bakersfield College, and he is producing a line of social studies materials for parents who homeschool their kids. He says his first project is going to be a Native American history course, which is his specialty, with original text, images, videos, and more. Good for him. Many, many more kids are going to benefit from his expertise and his skill set now that he's seeking a much wider audience. But the important thing here is a lot of people are starting to push back on it. And it's a very good thing. I was talking with a couple of friends yesterday, including someone who is active in his chamber of commerce as a minority, leading minority businesses. And he can't stand DEI. He said, everyone's a loser. Everyone comes out a loser except the people running these programs. He says a lot of white folks don't like it because they are, you know, they were taught since their childhood years that someone's race doesn't matter. What matters is who you are and how you act. And of course, DEI says, no, it's all about race. Race should not be minimized. Race should be magnified. And it doesn't help minorities because DEI policies are divisive. And instead of people working together, it's, you know, people being pitted against each other. And it doesn't really matter who wins those battles because, again, division, rancor, mistrust, skepticism, all these things end up swimming to the surface. So the war on DEI is a war against bigotry. It is a war against racism. It is a war against double standards, and it's a war that more people need to wage. And I'm glad that this professor down in California did so. And I hope more so will as well. These DEI programs don't need to be reformed. They need to be removed. They need to be done away with. In fact, you know, all of these diversity programs should be scrapped and replaced with a program that runs by a single standard. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Or to get biblical about it, love your neighbor as yourself. Or do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's that simple. The world would be so much, there would be so much less anxiety in this country and in this world if people just were treated, if the guiding standard for how you treat people who are different race from you, different gender from you, different sexual orientation from you, different ethnicity from you, different religion from you is, all right, fine, just treat them the way you would like to be treated. Why do we make these things complex? I'll tell you why we make these things complex. Because a lot of people make money and gain power from making those things complex. They're not complex. And that, in every walk of life, should be, again, the guiding standard. Just treat other people the way you would like to be treated. And judge other people not by what they look like, but by their actions and by their words. In other words, what they choose to say and what they choose, how they choose to act. And you give the job to the person who is best qualified by virtue of what they have done and how they have comported themselves. But that's if I were running for president, that is what I would say. I'd like to do away with not just diversity, equity, inclusion, just the entire diversity movement. Would like to see it replaced with a single guiding standard. Just treat others the way you want to be treated. All right. I want to talk to my friend Lars Larson here in a moment here on The Commute with Carlson. It is 6:47. 6:47 in the morning. We will be talking about a controversial inmate at the women's prison in Purdy here in Pierce County, largely because the inmate is not a woman. We'll get into that in just a moment on The Commute with Carlson with Lars Larson. 7:07 on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, perfect selection. We have a controversial inmate at the Washington Penitentiary for Women in Purdy. It's out near Gig Harbor on the peninsula. And Lars Larson, our noon to three host, who jumped on this story before I could get to it.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, John. I'm sorry to steal material.
Is the man with the scoop, do tell us.
What the heck is wrong with the Department of Corrections when they say, we're going to take somebody who is a freak? He's a convicted molester. He's a convicted sexual criminal. He's still got his plumbing downstairs, but calls himself a woman now. So we're going to put him in a women's prison with a bunch of actual biological women. John, what could possibly go wrong? Well, what did go wrong is then some of his roommates, including one where he was allowed to say, I don't want to bunk with this woman because she's harassing me. And he got to choose the person that he was assigned to cell with.
Who didn't want to be his roommate.
No, and then he proceeds to, I don't know that he ever got, actually got to the point of touching her, but he was certainly, you know, edging up to that, sitting on her bunk, sitting next to her bunk, doing things like this. And the thing is, let's start with the most basic fact. Don't ignore, he's a biological male with biological plumbing below his belt buckle. And you say, what do you think a guy like that? And this is the guy who had molested his own sister, according to his dad, when she was six, according to him, when she was nine. Not that I think there's a gigantic difference there, but he says, I couldn't help it. My hormones were out of control. Well, apparently, his hormones are still out of control, and the State Department of Corrections decides to put him in with a bunch of women? Somebody needs to be fired.
No, yeah, this shows the absolute madness of trans ideology, that simply by insisting that he is a woman, he now, after being imprisoned for sexually molesting females, is sentenced to serve his term in a prison with females.
Well, the state Department of Corrections could correct that. Why give him a captive audience of future victims
who have been complaining about his actions toward them? Anyway, you don't want to miss Lars Larson every day of the work week, noon to 3, Talk Radio 570 KVI, hour number 2 of The Commute right around the corner. 3.5 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Very interesting lawsuit making its way through the local judiciary here, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Before we do, we're going to do an interesting, we're going to have a little expanded conversation, I guess you could say, at 8 o'clock here on The Commute, something I have not done in a long, long time. I want to invite listeners to join a conversation about whether you have been penalized, whether you have suffered for expressing your support for Donald Trump. Danny Westneed had this column yesterday in the Seattle Times saying that Republicans as a group are the least popular group in Washington state. And he said they even show up beneath atheists, which he admits he is. And he says, when you're below my group, man, you're really in sad shape. All right. Don't know if that's true. But I do know that Danny says, I know why Republicans are unpopular. It's because of Donald Trump. So here's what I'm going to do at 8 o'clock. I'm going to ask you if you have suffered for supporting Donald Trump in any way. For instance, economically, have you been denied a job promotion or a contract or a customer? Have you been denied a job promotion or an opportunity? Have you suffered socially? Have you lost friend or friends or been made to feel unwelcome in organizations you've been a part of? Or have you suffered consequences personally within your family? Family members who used to talk to you don't talk to you. They say, if you're for Donald Trump, you're not my brother. You're not my uncle anymore. You're not my son anymore, et cetera, et cetera. You're not my daughter. I would like to get a sense, because here's the thing about Republicans, conservatives, they tend to be a lot more stoic than people who are on the left. People on the left, if you think about it, tend to be much more expressive. They're much more likely to express their opinion about something, especially if they think they're being they're a victim. They're constantly whining. And let's put it this way. Those little brats you see in the grocery store throwing temper tantrums, they all grow up to vote Democrat. They all grow up to vote liberal. And maybe I'm exaggerating to make a point, but you get my drift. Conservatives tend to keep these things hidden. They tend to just deal with it, not whine about it. But I just want to get a sense from people. And we don't want people to use you don't have to call them. I'm not going to ask your name or where you work or anything like that. But we just want to get an idea. In a free country like this, do you pay a price for expressing your support for Donald Trump? So we'll be doing that in a little less than an hour here on The Commute. In the meantime, some interesting stuff going on in the news. A civil trial has begun in the case of a protester who was killed during a Black Lives Matter demonstration along I-5. This goes back to the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, when there were demonstrations and riots breaking out around the country, including here in Washington. And they had closed a part of I-5 for the protesters, and somebody drove up the ramp and aimed his car at hitting these protesters like it was bowling, and he was trying to strike down, treating people like they're bowling pins. It was awful. It's caught on tape. It's not a very pretty sight to see. One young woman was killed. Another was badly hurt. And the estate, the family of the woman who was killed, Summer Taylor, is suing Washington, saying the state patrol should have done more to keep cars from entering the freeway during the protest, which she her family will point out, was closed for the protesters.
The attorney general's office claims it was the protesters and Khalid who were to blame. The state patrol says troopers didn't want to directly confront protesters to get them off the highway. But ultimately, a freeway protest has inherent risks to people who participate.
It's never safe for pedestrians to be on the highway.
The trial could take a few weeks, and Khalid is expected to testify from prison. He said he didn't know there were protesters on the freeway at the time, and the state patrol said there was never any evidence that he intentionally targeted them. Reporting in Seattle, Jeremy Harris, Como News.
Okay, well, if you see the video, it's very hard to believe that. The victim, again, was a 24-year-old young woman named Summer Taylor. She worked at a local vet, the urban vet. She identified as non-binary and used they, them pronouns, but she was female. And in many ways, your prototypical Seattle lefty, you know, pink hair, you know, very passionately a member of the Black Lives Matter movement. And so she was on the freeway, which, again, because the state troopers did not want to be confrontational, they allowed the protesters to come on near the freeway, and they closed off exits to the freeway. And that didn't matter to 27-year-old DeWitt Khalid. It is hard to look at that video and believe for a moment that he did not know there were people on the freeway, because it looks like he was trying to run them over. The protesters were with what was being called the Black Femme March, and they were on the freeway dancing. That was when Khalid's car, about 10 o'clock in the evening, drove at freeway speeds toward the barricade of three vehicles and then maneuvered around on the shoulder, continued driving up the ramp at freeway speeds on the shoulder. Then he veered the car, again, you can see this on tape, veered sharply to the left and directly into the protesters who were not able to get off the road. The vehicle was stopped. He was placed in custody. In the meantime, Summer Taylor is dead, and another young woman from Portland who was in Seattle for the protests, her name was Diaz Love. She was in serious condition in the hospital, but stable. What's interesting about DeWitt Khalid is, and the media for some reason are being very bashful about pointing this out, is the man who drove the car up the ramp so he could hit these protesters is Black. DeWitt Khalid is a Black man. He emigrated from Eritrea. He had gone to Washington State University for about 6 years. Don't know if he got his degree or not. It wasn't clear what his motive was. And the reason why I think the media are committing malpractice by not pointing out who it was who hit her with the car is that they're kind of like leaving it vague. And the obvious inference you would draw from a car driving into a Black Lives Matter demonstrator is that it must be someone who is racist, who is trying to take out his rage against the Black Lives Matter movement. And in this case, that is not true. The driver of the car was Black. The person he hit was white. And again, his photo's been all over the place. He ended up being, he was facing 13 years for seriously injuring DeWitt Love and killing Summer Taylor. He took a plea deal and ended up getting a little over 6 years in prison. 3 years for injuring DeWitt Love and 3.5 years for vehicular homicide. And again, what looks like a targeted killing, that he was veering into these people. But that's what you need to know about this case that for some reason isn't making the news. I think it fills out the picture, gives you greater context to what's going on. But again, it seems there are elements of the media that kind of like this, you know, keeping open this narrative that she was killed by someone who clearly was expressing rage against the Black Lives Matter movement. And there's no evidence that was the case. And in fact, the driver was black. By the way, the obvious inference to draw is, well, he was hopped up on drugs or he was impaired. He was neither. Just someone who was out of his mind. Alrighty, it is coming up on 17 minutes after 7 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I want to give some attention. I think I'm going to hold on to the story here for a few minutes. The mother of a 13-year-old who was fatally shot at the Alderwood Mall in July. Remember this? She was walking away with a friend from the food court when this punk gets into a beef with some other kids and he pulls out a gun and they scatter, they run away. And of course, like an idiot, he runs after one of them and just fires his gun, misses the guy he's shooting at, and hits Jada Woods Johnson, again, 13 years old, kills her. She gets the death penalty for going to Alderwood Mall. Her mother says it is time to change the juvenile justice system in Washington. And I want to give this story a little bit more attention. I also want to get in touch with this family. I would like to help them. If there's anything weak, if there's any good that can come out of this terrible thing that happened to this 13-year-old teenager, it should be a complete overhaul of our hideously lenient juvenile justice system. We talk about that a little later. We've got a lot going on here. The Morning Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI is 19 minutes after 7, which means right around the corner, it's Big Mike with the social media moment of the morning here on the John Carlson Show. Great having you here. Good morning. All right, Big Mike, what is going on? Social media madness this morning.
Well, apparently, talking politics at work can be a quote-unquote double-edged sword. That in a new survey, workplace analysis by Gallup, the Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino and Resort. This is a little bit of a breakdown I saw tweeted by Gallup that was based on survey data collected earlier this year, which found that 45% of workers have had recent political discussions with their colleagues. Over half, 54% of that, of fully on-site employees told Gallup that they'd talked about political issues with a coworker. Just 28% of remote workers reported similar discussions. Now, if you're a remote worker, I don't know who you're going to talk to because I guess you're just working from home. but nearly half of hybrid workers who kind of do like some work from home but also work from work like the rest of us also talked with their coworkers about politics. There's good and bad in letting political discussion seep into the workplace, according to Gallup. It can break the ice, helping coworkers deepen their relationships, Gallup said, but it can also cause harm, particularly if workers are already disengaged on their job. And part of the reason why I kind of bring, I found this particular story on social media is this ties into your question that you're going to ask listeners shortly of if there have been prices that folks have paid for supporting President Trump. Get back to this article from Gallup here. Employee engagement may buffer the potential negative effects, Gallup says, but previous Gallup research shows that just a third of American employees are considered quote-unquote engaged on the job. Gallup estimates that a lack of employee engagement costs the U.S. economy $1.9 trillion in productivity. Employee engagement affects retention rates, productivity, customer service, and profitability. Jim Harder, the chief scientist for workplace management and well-being at Gallup, previously told the National Desk. Now, this new analysis of political discussions at work found 38% of all employees said they've overheard coworkers talking about politics. Gallup found that workplace political discussions made 12% of employees feel uncomfortable, but Gallup also found such talk makes 14% of workers feel included, and 11% said they grew closer to a colleague because of their political views. Gallup found political discussions are more common in certain workplace settings. Now, this is kind of the meat of it that I wanted to get to. Industries with conservative-leaning employees, 60%, are more likely than those in industries with liberal-leaning employees, 48%, to report having political discussions. For folks having in ideology-neutral industries, 41% are least likely to discuss politics on the job. And male-dominated industries, 52%, are more likely than female-dominated industries, 42%, or gender parity industries, 43%. I'm not sure what that means. To report workplace political discussions, Gallup suggests company leaders can take steps to reduce potentially harmful effects of workplace political discussions. Bosses can emphasize a culture of respect and inclusion, foster trust and understanding between colleagues, and set expectations for how conversations, that is easy for me to say at 7:30 in the morning, should be managed, according to Gallup. So it gets a little word salad.
I know
salad-y
a lot
here.
Of people. I know, yeah. A lot of people, Mike, who tell me just the opposite, that
yeah.
They play down the politics. They don't talk politics in the office. Just to even let people know where they stand, because they don't want to risk that someone is just going to react by going zombie on them.
Right.
Well, just proof right now, the three of us sitting here, have we ever shared with each other our beliefs and our politics and the ways we're thinking?
No, but I give you both sample ballots to vote.
Yeah, I was going to say, only between 6 and 9 in the morning and then 3 to 6 in the afternoon. But it's interesting, here in our workplace, you know, we're at KVI, the radio station, but we also share space with other radio stations. So even like the mechanics of show prep and just talking about like content and topics that were covered kind of falls under this double-edged sword of political conversations, because there's been times where folks are like, hey, you know, can you like, you know, keep it down and, you know, maybe kind of cool it with the political talk. And it's like, friend, I'm trying to run a conservative radio show here. Sorry if that bothers your sensibilities. But that's some of the friction I've run into just literally here in our building.
So, and, you know, by the way, we're wide open on discussion. We like that.
Yeah.
We like that here at KVI.
So that is your social media sweep for this hour. But then coming up in the next hour, it's my favorite segment, Social Media from Socialist. And we're going to check in with some members of the squad and see what they're up to.
Excellent. And and then in about a half hour, we'll be asking you if you have spoken out in favor of Donald Trump. Have you paid a price for doing so? Has it cost you? Has it cost you economically in terms of job opportunities or promotions or what have you, customers, if you're a business owner? Has it caused tension among friends, social circle? Have you lost, you know, friends and colleagues? Are organizations, you know, no longer, you know, as welcoming as they were for you? And of course, family. Has it caused a rift in your family? Anyway, I'm going to be putting that question to you at 8 o'clock on the commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. We're about a half hour out as the commute continues. When we come back, how an illegal immigrant who was accused of rape, credibly accused of rape, was freed and not deported. So now he's being charged with rape again. That's straight ahead on the commute with Carlson.
You ever heard Elvis sing Beatles?
No, but that'll do.
1965, this was the day Elvis said, come on over to the house, Bel Air, California. 4 hours, the Beatles and Elvis. There's always been rumor they recorded material and jammed. Well,
the Beatles were in on this? They were recording with him?
No, there's always been a rumor they recorded with Elvis. Nothing's ever been produced, even though some of the Memphis Mafia said, oh, they had a jam session, but nobody got anything documented. Elvis recorded 4 Beatles songs. The Beatles, among their 200-plus songs they recorded, never did record any Elvis songs.
It is 23 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Yesterday, there was a wreath-laying ceremony in Arlington to honor the lives of American service personnel who died at what's being called the Abbey Gate bombing. This was part of the incredibly botched, disgracefully conducted evacuation from Afghanistan. 13 service members dead. And the president was there for the wreath-laying ceremony yesterday to mark the third anniversary of the terrible bombing. But it wasn't President Biden. President Biden is on vacation, and there's no sign of Kamala Harris either. Former President Donald Trump was there for the wreath-laying ceremony. It's interesting because I thought the Biden administration was proud of our evacuation. Remember, they were saying, oh, we don't see any problem here. We think this is going great. We think, with the exception of this, you know, this one little problem there, we think that we did fine. They didn't do fine. Not only did we lose those 13 service members, we left behind, Americans were left behind in Afghanistan. Not only that, but people we had identified, and just as important, maybe more important, the Taliban had identified hundreds of Afghan civilians who were helping us, who were on our side, who were working for us, and we left them behind. A former Navy SEAL, Ryan Zinke, who is now a Republican House member in Montana, said, it's probably one of the deepest failures militarily in my lifetime. I don't even think that is a close call. The botched withdrawal killed 170 civilians on top of the 13 American troops and left behind, are you ready for this? 7 billion, not 7 million, not 70 million, not 700 million, 7 billion. $1 billion worth of military equipment that is now in the hands of the Taliban. A spokesman for the Biden-Harris State Department called the withdrawal the, quote, correct policy choice. Congressman Mike Walls of Florida says, I've dealt with Gold Star families my entire military career. The grief is deep and palpable. I've never dealt with a group that's so angry at Joe Biden and how they have been treated. So leading up to the withdrawal, you'll recall that several White House officials, including the Secretary of State and the president himself, went on vacation. So when Joe Biden showed no interest in attending this wreath-laying ceremony to mark the third anniversary, Donald Trump was more than happy to do so. Again, just one more reason. We have got to get these people. And when you vote for Kamala Harris, you're voting for a continuation of Biden-Harris policies. She hasn't said that she'd do anything different from Biden. Let me say that again for emphasis. She hasn't said she would do anything different from Joe Biden. Why on earth would anyone vote for a continuation of this? Well, you know, she's not, you know, doddering and, out of control of her faculties. Yeah, fine. But the policies are the same, and it's the policies that are unpopular. Joe Biden's policies were never popular, except with the far left and hyper-partisan Democrats. With the American people at large, they were not popular because they were failing demonstrably. Nothing's going to get better. That needs to be the Trump tagline. Nothing gets better if these people stay in office. It's the same. It's a different person at the top, and it's the same crew. It's the same workforce, the same people going to be calling the shots. Calling the shots for Biden because he was often asleep at the switch. Calling the shots for Kamala Harris. She's too inept. All right. Speaking of inept, let's go to New York City. What the New York Times is calling a failure of cooperation between New York City and federal authorities allowed an illegal immigrant named Daniel Bonilla, age 24, from Nicaragua, to slip out of the grasp of law enforcement after he was freed from a rape charge. Not because he didn't do it, but because the victim chose not to cooperate. For a year and 3 months, Daniel Bonilla was jailed at Rikers Island, accused of raping a transgender woman in a migrant shelter. Then, a couple of months ago, June 24th, he was summoned before a judge. The victim had refused to testify, so prosecutors were offering him a deal. If you plead guilty to a felony assault charge, you could be released that very day. The judge did warn Mr. Bonilla that he could be deported and said, "Do you still wish to proceed with your plea of guilty?" Mr. Bonilla said, court transcript here, "Of course." So they let him out. And neither the city nor the Brooklyn DA notified federal officials when he was released. So Mr. Bonilla, 6 weeks later, according to police, raped a homeless woman under the Coney Island boardwalk. Deliberately targeted, actually had a lookout who, armed with a pipe, beat a man who was said to be the homeless woman's boyfriend to keep him from interrupting the rape. Turns out New York is a sanctuary city, and that means local law enforcement officials restrict their coordination with federal immigration authorities. ICE had requested that after he was arrested, that the city not release him. They sent a so-called detainer request, but the city said, "Oh, we don't see a detainer request." And the DA's office said, "It's not our responsibility." The victim in the attack had a cut mark on her face where Mr. Bonilla is said to have pressed a knife against her to force her to compel her to accede to his wishes. He first stepped foot in the United States on December 7th, 2022. Border agents found him near Eagle Pass, Texas. They turned him over to ICE, and he was then deported, right? No. Biden administration policy. Biden-Harris administration policy. He was enrolled in a program that allowed him to stay in the country instead of being detained. And that's when the sexual assaults began. Again, we've got to get these people out of there. We got to have people who are serious about controlling the border. I could spend the next hour and then all 3 hours of tomorrow's show talking about severe assaults and rapes committed against Americans by illegal immigrants who have been let go, deliberately let go into the country. It's 49 minutes after 7 o'clock, 11 minutes to 8, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Quick update, by the way, that cyber attack at SeaTac Airport not letting go.
SeaTac Airport is holding more than just one type of baggage with a Samsonite-size cyber problem. Screens are dark, kiosks are down, and the lines for Spirit Air are enough to dampen any passenger's spirit.
How long have you been waiting in line?
Approximately an hour from the time we got here.
Gabe and Karen Martinez are trying to get home to Virginia.
Has anybody told you what's going on?
Something about the computers got hacked and they're doing everything manually.
The primitive plane travel complete with Xerox copies of signs and handwritten boarding passes. The result of what SeaTac is calling a cyber attack.
What the heck happened here?
At that point, that we're still looking into that.
SeaTac Airport spokesperson Perry Cooper suggests the biggest impact has been on airlines that share check-in and baggage areas or common use gates, and that the hack halted internal baggage processing for those airlines.
Okay. Again, we hope things get better. Can you imagine? It's 1967 out at SeaTac.
Basically, yeah, it's crazy.
It's what life would be like without computers.
Since Saturday. And a lot of people are going manual.
Doing the best.
What's that mean?
And written boarding passes. Yikes. All right. When we come back, I will be asking KVI listeners, have you paid a price for expressing your support for Donald Trump or his presidency or his re-election? We want you to give us a call, 206-421-5757, and share your stories. More on this right around the corner after your 8 o'clock headlines. Hour number three of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So glad you are here. Thanks for making the time. A pair of articles caught my attention. I said, you know what? I've got to ask the listeners what their experience has been. The articles concern how supporters of Donald Trump are perceived. One of them was a column by Danny Westneath that says that Republicans are even less popular, according to a recent poll, are even less popular in Washington state than atheists. And he says it's all because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is toxic. Donald Trump is so unpopular, no one wants anything to do with anybody associated, even with the same, being in the same political party as Donald Trump. The other article involves the owner of a custom printing company in upstate New York. His name is Anthony Constantino, and Mr. Constantino, after the failed attempt on President Trump's life, made the following post on social media. I don't care what your political views are, but the hate for Trump and his supporters has gone too far. People are terrified to admit they support Trump. I've been scared myself. Americans shouldn't live in fear. I support Trump. Many here at Sticker Mule, that's the name of the custom printing company, many at Sticker Mule do. Many at Sticker Mule Printing also support Biden. The political hate needs to stop. He was buried with angry, insulting, and vulgar social media responses, including death threats. One tweeted that he was a pro-Trump, Christo-fascist, transphobic, homophobic, xenophobic, sexist, etc., etc. Someone else said, absolutely disgusting, immediately unsubscribing, misspelled, and taking my business elsewhere for print needs. And on it went. He said, Mr. Constantino, that he voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020, but he stayed quiet because people were getting bullied and slandered. The attempt on his life drove him to make that post, which, again, seems actually kind of even-handed. In that he said he's supporting Trump, and many of his employees do, but many of his employees also support Biden. But he called for an end, didn't call for people to support Donald Trump, he just called for an end to the hatred that may have created the climate, making an assassination attempt more likely. I have been warning about that climate for over a year here on the show. Anyway, here, so you put those two stories together, and I'm thinking, I wonder if any of our listeners have suffered. Have they suffered economically in terms of lost jobs or job opportunities or promotions, what have you, customers, if they're a business owner like Mr. Constantino? Have they suffered socially in terms of lost friends or no longer being made to feel welcome at certain organizations or off the invitation list for dinner parties, et cetera, et cetera? Or have you suffered personally, you know, family strain, just because you support Donald Trump? If you have, I would like to hear your story. And I know it's not easy for a lot of you, because people who are conservatively inclined tend to be more stoic, less expressive, less willing to complain, certainly less willing to whine than liberals. But I would like to know, and I think a lot of our listeners would like to know, to see if they are not an outlier, that there's plenty of people who have gone through what they've gone through. So call or text me. Let me know. 206-421-5757. We're going to start up at Whidbey Island, Oak Harbor, the Sound of Freedom by the Naval Air Station. We're going to start with Troy this morning. Troy, you're on the John Carlson Show. How are you?
Oh, doing fine.
All right. Tell me your story.
Okay. I'm retired now, but I was sailing in the maritime industry. That was back about 2018. I called a taxi cab. I was going to a job to catch an Amtrak train to a job. Mm-hmm. Okay. The taxi driver. I mistakenly started a small talk conversation with the driver. He was very agitated. I told him I like Donald Trump. I supported Donald Trump. I think he would do a great job as president. He performed great during the pandemic.
And what happened?
Here's what happened. The cab driver was, I didn't know it, he was a progressive leftist. He got angry with me. He started throwing temper tantrums at me and took me the roundabout way, ran up the taxi fare, went to the wrong city. What I'm saying, the train station was in Mount Vernon. I was going from Oak Harbor to Mount Vernon. He took me to Burlington instead and started throwing a tantrum at me and accused me of being a backseat driver. And he was a radical progressive leftist. You would think that people up here are conservatives because it's a Navy town, but he was a progressive leftist, the All cab right. driver. And, you know, I didn't know where he stood politically. I made that mistake. Apparently, you know.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Why not simply say, "Boy, I don't see it that way." What is it you like about him? Because there's nothing about Trump that I like. I mean, he could have said that, or he could have just shrugged his shoulders and said, "Well, it's a big world. There's plenty of people who disagree with me politically, and just drive like any other taxi driver would have done."
Yeah, he wasn't rational behaving at all as a taxi driver.
How did it end?
Well, finally he got me to my destination, just barely. I was able to make the train. He got me there, and then he made up a lot of excuses for his belligerent behavior, and I paid him the fare, and he didn't apologize, but he just, you know, I felt bad because I was so passive to his outburst and everything, because he could have caused me to lose a job. But
yeah.
I'm a strong Trump supporter. I support Dave Reichert. I'm a conservative.
Okay.
I see what's going
on. We got lots of calls lined up here. We're going to get to them. That's a good way to kick things off. Thank you, Troy. I appreciate that. Let's go to Paul in Tacoma. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi, John.
Hi. Go ahead, Paul.
The last election, I went to the convention as a delegate. I never talked politics at work. I work in a medical center in Seattle. I was a charge nurse, and I never talked politics, and accidentally they found out that I went to the Republican convention. At the time, I was an anti-Trumper, believe it or not, delegate. And during the time, I since changed, but the I was threatened twice, once to get my face beat, vote by females, and another one was I was threatened, my life was threatened. I went to my supervisor and complained about it, and it's my supervisor, who I trained years and years ago, and we're friends, or thought we were friends, basically told me, said, "Well, Paul, you need to change your politics." And I says, "What do you mean?" And then the conversation went that, "No, excuse me, if I threatened them, you'd fire me, right?" He said, "Damn right you would." And if then she turned around, "So you're not going to do anything about this?" Says, "No, you need to change your politics." And
really?
This is, oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. So you explained the situation, and when you said, "If I threatened her, you'd fire me, right?" Oh, yes. And so
right.
She did this to me, and no discipline at all? Well, no, you need to change your politics?
Exactly. Yep, exactly. And this is the climate I've been working in for the last 20 years. And it got so bad that I had to leave. The saving grace on that for me, they had to close doors because I was the only one that was doing all the overtime, and they wouldn't hire agency nurses. So this whole agency closed up, and a lot of people went out to work 3 weeks after I left.
Wow. Wow. What? That's something. We are. Thank you very much for that. That was there's an eye opener for you. An employee threatens you to the point where you complain about it, and your supervisor says that the problem here is your politics. They need to change. And you say, "Well, if I had threatened her, would I be fired?" "Oh, yes, that's a firing offense." "Well, then why isn't she disciplined?" "Because you need to change your politics." There's a progressive work environment there for you. Again, we are taking calls from people who paid a price for speaking out in support of Donald Trump, who paid a price economically, socially, personally. Problems, you know, family relations get strained. I've heard of families not allowing kids, of children who have kids, not allowing their grandkids, parents to see their grandkids because they don't like the parents' politics. So if you have any story about how your support for Donald Trump has created problems for you, I'd love to hear them. We got plenty of people calling. Let's go out here to Robert in Seattle. Go ahead, Robert.
Good morning, John. I just wanted to talk about the stark contrast in the political movement socially versus professionally. With my job as a truck driver, when I talk to my coworkers, even though they might all, not all the time agree with me politically, we're usually able to come to a mutual understanding because we all share the same plight in today's economy. However, socially, I made the mistake back in 2020 bringing up the fact that I was going to vote for Trump. And that was some very, very tough opposition, so much so to the point now I don't even talk about politics. I usually try to avoid that subject altogether in my social group just so I can keep the peace. It's just eye-opening
now,
for me.
Now, do they do the same?
Oh, no. They're out and open for their support of Kamala Harris and all of that, and Tim Walz. They're out and open about it. So much, and also locally with, I think the guy is trying to, the Democrat for governor. I support Dave Riker.
Bob Ferguson.
But uh-huh. I don't talk politics with my social group simply because I'm ostracized.
Yeah. Wow.
And professionally, I could be in the same truck with a registered Democrat, and our talks are all about policy and how we all are suffering from high gas and grocery prices. We all are suffering high interest rates and mortgages. I don't have that same comfort in talking about politics when it comes to my friend groups.
Interesting. Great call, Robert. Thanks very much. Off to Canaan in Kent. You're on the John Carlson Show. Go for it. Have you paid a price for supporting Trump? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, back in 2016, I voted for Trump. And prior to that, I was not a political person at all. There was something about Trump that brought me over to his side, voted for him. And when he won, I went to Facebook and posted on there pretty much just like, yay, Trump won. And the amount of hate that I got from friends that I'd had since like elementary school, just calling me all of the things, xenophobic, bigoted, racist, blah, 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 ultimately drove me to just 100% delete Facebook, which was actually kind of a good thing. But it was very interesting to learn how quickly my friendship could just get thrown into the garbage can.
It's interesting how I see this again much more on the left. They get personally offended if you oppose them politically. They don't say, "Oh, I disagree with you so much. I just think Trump is going to be a terrible president." They get personally like, "How dare you? This insults me personally that you would vote for someone like Donald Trump." You don't see that so much on the other side. The Republicans tend to think, you're voting for the wrong guy. And the Democrats tend to think, you've just offended me.
Well, yeah, and just like how you said a couple times, we are quite a bit more stoic than the other side. We hold our chin a little bit higher up than the left.
So did anything change?
Oh, no, absolutely not. The people who cast me aside, left me aside, and I went off and made all new friends. And nowadays, I actually get to drive around in my personal vehicle. I got 4 Trump flags that I fly, and the amount of love
that you went clear off to the other side. I said, or if you're going to be that way about it.
Love, I get so much more love and thumbs up and quick little honks for people for me to look at them to wave at me than I do other bad things.
Yes, half a peace sign.
So
okay. That's really... I love that's a great
just hearing
anecdote.
Kanan's story. Remember back in the day too. How many celebrities said if Trump wins, I'm leaving the country?
Yeah, and then
How many left, John? How many fell and left the country? None.
Maybe that's another reason to vote for Donald Trump this time, so you can follow through on
your promise
to leave.
Nobody said that this time either. I haven't heard any celebrities or artists saying if he wins again, I'm leaving the country.
Well, I think they learned their lesson.
But I love the story. Here's a guy who was never political, but there was something about Trump. And I know people like that. They're not political at all, but there's something about Trump that not only brought them up, but the people who go to the rallies. A lot of them have never gone to a political rally before. They wouldn't have thought of going to a rally or a Lincoln Day dinner or a GOP convention or district meeting or anything, but something about Trump.
Kanan, you have to let us know if you get any more reaction on Facebook now that we put you on radio. Yeah. I'm sure.
Well, no, but I love he posts something on Facebook. I'm really happy, and he gets so much abuse that he decides it's so wrong that he says, "All right, up yours. I've got Trump flags on my truck now." All right, you got 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. The John Carlson Show. Something I haven't done in a while, and that is asking people if you support Donald Trump. Has it cost you? Have you had to put up with losing friends, losing job opportunities, if you own a business, losing customers, maybe even trouble within your family? Call and let me know, because we'll keep this segment rolling here. Plenty of calls here on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. But first, it's Big Mike. Social media from socialists right around the corner. 827, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Big report, bevy of material from Big Mike, social media from socialists. Go.
All right. Well, it is our favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. And did the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, have an obligation to include Palestinians and Palestinian Americans in the proceedings? We'll find out. The Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And Rashida Tlaib, nobody's favorite socialist congresswoman from Detroit, reposted a article written by British-American journalist Mehdi Hassan called "The Six Prominent Palestinians Tell Me What It's Like to Live in America Right Now." And in this article, they write that the Democrats had the obligation to offer a speaking slot to any Palestinians at the DNC the moment they decided to platform the students, to platform the parents of an Israeli hostage in Gaza. I cannot talk at 8:30 in the morning, and my apologies. To restate, the article says that the DNC had an obligation to offer a speaking slot to a Palestinian at the DNC when they decided to platform the parents of an Israeli hostage in Gaza, but they chose not to. Quote, the DNC made it clear with their speakers that they value Israeli children more than Palestinian children. That a quote from Representative Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian-American member of Congress. Tlaib herself was not present in Chicago last week, which brings me to the tweet from Rashida Tlaib that I'm going to share here now. Quote, it's hard not to feel invisible as a Palestinian American. Our trauma and pain feel unseen and ignored by both parties. One party uses our identity as a slur and the other refuses to hear from us. Where is the shared humanity?
So here's what I'd say to Mehdi Hassan.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we will book a speaker on one condition, that the Palestinian be anti-Hamas.
There you go.
Because Hamas is a terror group. Are you all right with that, Mehdi?
There it is.
And the answer would be equivocation. And eventually he would most likely say, you shouldn't be putting restrictions on, you shouldn't be deciding the authentic voice of Palestinians, something like that. But that's what it all gets down to. They're really for Hamas.
Yes.
They're really for the movement that wants Israel extinguished off the Israeli area that marks their borders.
Absolutely. And it reminds me of a meme. It's a little bit of a visual daily double, but I've reposted this from my Twitter account at Mike on KVI. And it's how to free Palestine. And it's Peter Parker reading a book. It says how to free Palestine. He opens it up. It says stop killing Jews, and then throws the book away. And it's no more complicated than that.
It's not complicated. That's right.
Yeah. How about Hamas surrender? And how about you free all the hostages? And then we'll talk.
Not a bad idea.
That's your right social now, media sweep.
Right now we're talking to KVI listeners. If you have expressed support for Donald Trump, have you paid a price for doing so? Has it meant lost business if you own a business? Has it meant lost jobs or promotions if you work for a business or in your government agency? Has it cost you friends on the social front? Has it caused you problems within your family? Call, let us know. We're taking your comments, text and phone, 206-421-5757. All right, 24 minutes after 8 o'clock. Back we go to your phone calls again. Haven't done this in a long time. Just opening up the phone lines and asking people who are Trump supporters, have you paid a price for doing so? Out to Burien now we go. Here's Chuck. Go ahead, Chuck. You're on the John Carlson Show.
Hello, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's a real simple story here in Burien. I've got a Trump hat from 2016 and all of that good stuff. I've got a shirt that says, T-shirt, says Veterans for Trump. And two of my friends and I walked into a bar in Burien. We've been there many, many times. And one guy was sitting down and said, you know, that shirt is not welcome here. So I told him, you want to try to take it off? And that ended the conversation. Now, we have a lot of different kinds of Republicans. Some of them won't say anything. I think we should stand up a whole lot more. I've got no problems with confrontation. And I retired many, many years ago. I'm 78 years old. But we've got to stand for something or we'll fall for nothing. Anything.
Yeah, fall for anything. Look, are liberals hesitant to express themselves? Do you see a shortage of liberal bumper stickers? Do you see a shortage of, you know, pride flags? You know, do you see a shortage of liberals expressing their views? Which is, you know, they're a free country. They're completely entitled to express themselves.
Well, partially, they won't. Some of my family are Democrats, and we talk. We'll have conversations about things, and it generally ends up, well, let's agree to disagree.
I think every family has that. We'll just agree to disagree, and we won't go any further. There's no sense. Yeah, but that's different. And I thank you for the call, Chuck. And I love how you gave the guy, okay, take it off me if you don't like my shirt. It's different saying, you know, we'll agree to disagree or we won't discuss it further on the one hand, and then trying to actively demonize a family member because of their politics. John, Seattle, you're on the John Carlson Show. Go. Are you still there, John? Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, John. Mine is about my sister, and I'm not a real fan of Facebook, but occasionally I get on there, and she would post up little memes and things and doesn't really think about what she posts. So my wife asked her a question about how do you justify that statement about something about Trump bashing. So she unfriended her. No answers is a typical liberal. She did the same thing to me. So I kind of think, okay, well, I'm just going to drop this Facebook stuff because it's a waste of time. But part of my story is trying to get along with liberals. I'm a self-employed contractor, and a couple of years ago when I did an estimate for a person, I will sometimes get on Google Maps to look it up and see if it's in Seattle, if I can even park near the job site. Well, Google did me a favor. There's a picture on there of the people's yard and all the signs that they have on their yard, and I go, oh, I see where you stand. I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to give you, before I price it, I'm going to add another 25% to your estimate for installation just to cover the cost of what you voted in. Your higher health care, I get less health care for the huge amount that I pay. I'm paying more for fuel to get to your place. I'm paying more for insurance. So it's all about fairness and equity, isn't it? I treated them the same way they want to be treated.
And how did they respond?
Well, they took the bid.
Oh, wow.
I didn't put it on a separate line item, but I thought about doing that to see how true the liberals are. Do you really want to cover what you're going to vote in? Extra cost and that. A little note to other contractors out there. You might think about that. They do cost us more, so we'll have them pay.
John, thanks very much. No, appreciate it. Let's go out here to Bob in Greenwood neighborhood, North Seattle. Go for it.
Hey, my first experience with Trump was kind of in the primaries of 2016, and I was in the break room with my coworkers watching TV for 15, and the first time I'd heard him, and I was totally taken back. And I think I said, I'm a lifelong Republican. I said, I'd vote for Bernie Sanders before I'd vote for him. But it didn't take me long to just get around his personality and, understand him. And there is so many people that are just reactionary, have derangement syndrome, whatever.
It's an interesting way you put it, that I said it took me a while to get around his personality to understand him.
Because
here is what the author Selena Zito Here's what she said. She said, Trump lovers take him seriously, but they don't take him literally. Trump.
That's exactly the way I feel about it. I've told that to my friends.
Trump haters. There's a corollary. Trump haters take him literally, but they don't take him seriously. So
Plus, I've got a lot of other problems.
Yeah. But no, that's a very interesting way you put it. At first, I have one of my best friends, same thing, said, you know, when he first heard him speak, said the guy's, you know, self-centered narcissist. And then when he watched the debate, he realized, wait a minute, this is the only guy who's really going to, the Republican debate, you know, where there were, I don't know, like 27 people on stage, it seemed, all these candidates. And is it? The only person there who's really going to change the status quo is Trump. I mean, really change it. And anyway, so
I mean, this liberal progressive movement is so powerful. It literally takes somebody like him to do this. But, you know, it's just, you know, I have someone in my family that is extremely liberal, and she's got a really bad case of Trump derangement syndrome.
It's a great comment, and I really appreciate it. I got to jump here because we're running out of time, and we still have all these phone calls. John calling from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, listening online. Go for it, John.
Well, hey, man. 4 years ago, I was demonized because my aunt said I was a communist, racist, whatever she said. And I took it one step further because the whole family chimed in, and I moved out of state. I was like, I was done with your guys' BS.
Oh, because you supported Trump, they called you that?
Yeah, I'm a Trump supporter. I believe what Trump is doing is a good thing. But, you know, I still get demonized by my family day in and day out every time they talk to me.
How can they call you a communist for supporting Trump? I don't get that.
I don't either. It's just I want to say they're the 60 and 70 hippies I was raised by. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Getting revenge on the 60s generation. Yes. No wonder they take it seriously. John, thanks very much. Sylvia is going to be our last call. Go for it, Sylvia.
Hi, John. This has been going on for years. I've lived in King County since 1974. And I sent you a text about this. I was driving through the U District 20 years ago with a W04 sticker on my car. And I was harassed. I was afraid for my life. I had numerous New York High signs. I had people pull up next to me. I thought they were going to sideswipe me to get my attention, and then they would shake their fist and yell. Very aggressive behavior, a lot of honking. And I think it was Obama and Romney that my neighbor, I had put something Republican out, and I'm a conservative independent. I don't consider myself either.
Okay.
But and my neighbor said, I guess you like your guns. You're going to shoot me.
Oh, my. Oh, jeez.
Okay. So this has been going on for years.
No, I think you're right. I think it's amped up in the last few years because of Trump, definitely. But no, I think Sylvia is exactly right. This has been going on. I remember I had a Reagan sticker on my car and was on his way to winning 49 states, and people were giving me flack for that in Seattle. A lot of people go into Seattle, if they're conservative, don't even put stickers on their car so they don't get their car vandalized. Listen, we have so much more. That's all the time we have now. We'll revisit this topic, however. We will revisit the topic when we come back. Here we have epidemic record amounts of violent juvenile crime. And believe it or not, they're actually going to take a vote today on whether to close, not expand, but close the juvenile justice jail. We'll talk with a county council member trying to hold his colleagues accountable right after this. Okay, I'm going to need some help here from my friend Reagan Dunn on the King County Council, represents Southeast King County, to make sense of this. We are in the midst of maybe the worst wave of violent juvenile crime we have seen. Armed carjackings by 12, 13-year-olds with ghost guns. That has happened. A record number of people being shot. Anyway, what is the King County Council thinking of doing when we have the worst amount of juvenile crime ever. They're considering closing the Juvenile Justice Center in Seattle. What on earth is going on? Dow Constantine is behind this, several council members on his side, but Regan Dunn pushing back in a very big way, former federal prosecutor. He says he's putting his colleagues on the record. He says, if you want to close it, vote to say so. And there's going to be a vote today on that very measure. Regan Dunn joins me for the next couple of minutes on the John Carlson Show. Good morning, Regan.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
What's going on?
Well, it's just a perverted extension of the defund, disarm, and disparage the police movement that, you know, was popular, I guess, in downtown Seattle 4 years ago. And now they want to keep going by closing the youth jail. The murderers and rapists who are there right now would be released potentially to unsecured respite houses put throughout the community in King County.
Why is that an improvement? Again, we're talking about
It's not. It's ridiculous. It obviously, you know, the 80% of those folks reoffend within 6 years. They're violent. They're dangerous. And the county council and others, county leadership, very generally, just want to get away with it because it's, and this is the rhetoric they're using, John. These are our children, and they shouldn't have to go through the hardship of being incarcerated, even though they've murdered and raped people, right? So, I mean, it's ridiculous. Obviously, it's absurd. 97% of people support keeping it open, according to a recent poll by Como News. So, okay, we got to keep it open for the worst of the worst.
Okay. I mean, you talk about a disconnect. Bottom line is there's two members of the county council who are running for county executive to succeed Dow Constantine. How are they going to vote?
Well, that's what's very interesting about the vote today, because, you know, obviously the policy is you got to keep the jail for the worst of the worst. But there's a lot of game playing going on by those two members who are trying to keep that.
Claudia Balducci and Girmay Zahile. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're trying to keep that uber left, that sort of abolitionist group that want to tear down the criminal justice system and replace it with they don't know what yet.
Okay, we only got
else.
About a minute, but why do they care what the abolitionist radicals think? They're so completely outnumbered. Even within the city of Seattle, they're getting rid of their radicals off the city council.
You'd think so. It's a huge disconnect. It's a huge political mistake for those two candidates to do that. They should do the right thing and keep the jail open for the worst of the worst.
What do you think the vote's going to be?
I don't know, man. This is going to be really close.
There's nine members on the county council.
Yep. I need five. I'm working on it. I've been working a coalition. I think maybe I'm going to get there. What I care about mostly is the jail stays open.
Of course. We're going to have you on tomorrow for an update if you're available. All right?
Sure.
Big Mike going to take care of that. All right. Thanks so much, Regan Dunn. Appreciate your service. Can you believe this, folks? The county council is every bit as worthless and out of touch as the Seattle City Council was 2 or 3 years ago. It's ridiculous. It's all the time we have for now. Get out there and enjoy this day. Let's talk again tomorrow.